Hello and welcome back to Legends of Surgery. I'm your host, Tyler Rouse, and in the next two episodes, I'm going to cover what is now a basic but important aspect of surgery, avoiding infections. In the first one, I'll cover hand washing, which seems both obvious and boring, but I assure you it's neither. Let's begin. I don't know about you, but where I work, you cannot miss the signs to wash your hands. There's a sanitizer dispenser at the front doors, in every hallway, at the cafeteria, and most importantly, at the entrance to every patient room. The hand-washing police patrol the corridors, clipboards in hand, tracking our every move. It seems like the importance of hand-washing is well understood, if not always carried out in practice. So it's hard to believe there was a time when the importance of clean hands, even prior to operating, was not always appreciated. In fact, it took the perseverance of the great and tragic character, Dr. Ignaz Semmelweis, to recognize this. Dr. Semmelweis was originally from Hungary, but trained in medicine at the University of Vienna, and achieved his medical degree in 1844. Some sources suggest that because he was a foreigner and Jewish, he was not able to gain employment following graduation. Regardless, he repeated a two-month course in practical midwifery, earning a master's degree in the subject, did some surgical training, and studied diagnostic and statistical methods for 15 months. All of this would singularly prepare him for his great discovery. In July of 1846, Dr. Semmelweis became the house officer in the first obstetrical clinic at the University of Vienna's teaching hospital, the Vienna General. Okay, a little background on the obstetrical setup at the Vienna General is needed here. There were two obstetrical clinics, creatively entitled First Clinic and Second Clinic. The first clinic was run by medical students and doctors, the second by midwives. In the mid-1800s, childbirth was a dangerous undertaking. New mothers would frequently die of puerperal fever, also known as childbed fever. Let's take a minute to explore this further. In Latin, a purpura is a woman in childbirth, since pur means child and parpare means to give birth. We now know that this fever actually represents a bacterial infection of the female reproductive tract, which left untreated can spread through the bloodstream, called septicemia or blood poisoning, and can become fatal. Okay, back to our story. Semmelweis, not surprisingly given his training, kept meticulous records of the two maternity wards in the hospital. In his first month working in First Clinic, 36 of 208 women died. That is a 17% fatality rate. He quickly discovered that the women in the clinic run by physicians died at a rate nearly five times higher than women in the midwives' ward. Think about that. Five times increased mortality of new mothers. Now try to imagine that happening today, and the justifiable hysteria that would be set off. Pun intended, the word hysteria comes from the Greek word hysterikos, meaning womb, as hysteria was originally thought to be a female illness caused by dysfunction of the uterus. In fact, it was known by the citizens of Venice that childbed fever was raging at the hospital. Some even called it the doctor's plague. So why would women go there? Well, the hospital had set up the clinics as gratis institutions, meaning free, and offered to care for their infants. This made the clinic attractive to underprivileged women, including prostitutes. So in exchange for free care, women would allow medical students and midwives to practice on them. Despite this, the women would beg to be admitted to the second clinic, and would sometimes even deliver in the streets near the hospital, claiming to have been en route to the hospital to take advantage of the free childcare, but avoid the dangers of delivery on the wards. Semmelweis puzzled over why these women having so-called street births would get childbed fever less than those women delivering on the ward. Here he describes this in his own words. To me, it appeared logical that patients who experienced street births would become ill at least as frequently as those who delivered in the clinic. What protected those who delivered outside the clinic from these destructive unknown endemic influences? So the thinking at the time was that the post-delivery deaths were due to poison air, frequently called miasma, emanating from something such as rotting organic matter. This was a theory of disease that dates back to antiquity, and for example was the main theory trying to explain the Black Death that ravaged Europe in the 14th century. Maybe you've seen pictures of the plague doctor costume worn by physicians at the time. I've posted that picture on my social media sites. The word miasma, in fact, comes from a Greek word meaning pollution. This idea actually remains with us to this day in the form of the word malaria, which literally means bad air. Okay, so back to the thinking around childbed fever at the time of our story. Some of us knew that the first clinic had a much higher mortality rate than the second clinic, but for what reason? It seemed unlikely to be due to a poison air, as the clinics were beside each other. To determine the reason, Semmelweis looked at differences in practices between the clinics and did what amounted to small experiments, changing one variable at a time, and looking for changes in outcomes. Today these would seem crazy, but since no one really had any idea what was causing the fevers, it was the only way to figure it out. These included things like changing the position of the women during childbirth and stopping priests from ringing bells in the wards following a death. It wasn't until the following year, 1847, that provided the tragic but critical clue. Dr. Jakob Kolechka, a pathologist and friend of Semmelweis's, cut his finger while performing an autopsy on a mother that had died of childbed fever. He himself then became ill and died, and his autopsy revealed findings similar to that in the dead mother's. And this was the kicker. What I haven't mentioned yet is that the medical students and doctors would start their day doing autopsies on the women that had died overnight of childbed fever, and would then go directly to First Clinic to deliver babies. The midwives were not involved in autopsies. This made Semmelweis postulate that the students and doctors were transferring some unknown cadaverous material which was causing the fevers. As much as this seemed like a revelation to Semmelweis, he in fact was not the first to make the connection between physicians and the spread of childbed fever. In 1795, a Scottish obstetrician working in Aberdeen named Alexander Gordon suggested in his treatise on the epidemic of puerperal fever that midwives and doctors that had recently treated women for puerperal fevers had spread the malady to other women. And Oliver Wendell Holmes, the Harvard physician who briefly made an appearance in the previous podcast on anesthesia, the ether dome and the beginnings of modern surgery, published The Contagiousness of Puerperal Fever in 1843, 3 years before Semmelweis started at the Vienna General. In it, he discerned that the disease was spread by physicians and recommended that actively practicing obstetricians abstain from performing autopsies on women who had died of puerperal fever as one of their paramount obligations to society. What made Semmelweis unique was that he introduced hand washing with chlorinated lime solutions for interns who had performed autopsies and then measured the results. The choice of a chlorinated lime solution was somewhat ironic, as he chose this to eliminate the putrid smell of infected autopsy tissue rather than any antiseptic properties it had. Remember, Louis Pasteur would not demonstrate his germ theory of disease until the 1860s. Well, the results were immediate and dramatic. The mortality rate in the first clinic dropped by 90%. And became comparable to that in the second clinic. To put this in perspective, the fatality rate in April of 1847 in the first clinic was 18.3%. Hand washing began in mid-May, and the rate in June was 2.2%, July was 1.2%, and August was 1.9%. You would think this kind of breakthrough would be instantly adopted worldwide, and Semmelweis would be treated like a conquering hero. Unfortunately, this was not the case at all. To get an understanding of the attitudes at the time, consider this quote from Dr. Charles Meigs, a leading obstetrician and teacher in Philadelphia. "Doctors are gentlemen, and gentlemen's hands are clean." Many physicians were outraged by the suggestion that they might be the cause of their patient's death. Semmelweis also had trouble convincing doctors, as he did not have a scientific basis upon which to explain his findings. Apparently his personality didn't help either. Semmelweis was angered by the rejection and became more shrill and angry, verbally attacking his colleagues. He also refused to publish his findings despite the encouragement of his supporters. He lost his appointment in Vienna in 1850 and abruptly left for Budapest, apparently without even saying goodbye to his friends and colleagues, because in his own words, he was, quote, "unable to endure further frustrations in dealing with the Viennese medical establishment," end quote. Semmelweis took up a position at St. Roch's Hospital, which he held from 1851 to 1857. He quickly established his hand-washing protocol and reduced the maternal mortality rate to 0.85% over his time there, also starting the practice of washing all instruments coming into contact with patients in labor. Back in Vienna, rates of childbed fever began to predictably rise again as the establishment returned to their previous practices. Semmelweis finally got around to publishing his findings, writing two articles in 1856 and 1858, but didn't get around to his magnum opus, a book entitled The Etiology, the Concept, and the Prophylaxis of Childbed Fever, until 1861. Following this, he wrote a series of open letters to his main critics, harshly criticizing them, calling them ignorant murderers. His behavior around this time also started to become more and more erratic. Theories as to the cause include severe depression, fatigue, and syphilis possibly contracted on the maternity wards, but the favorite theory is early onset Alzheimer's. In 1865, he was tricked into visiting an insane asylum with the idea that he'd be admitted. Once Semmelweis realized what was happening, he tried to escape. The guards beat him, and he wound up dying 2 weeks later of a gangrenous wound. The autopsy revealed extensive internal injuries and, in another cruel twist, blood poisoning. He was only 47 years old. A few years later, in 1867, Scottish surgeon Joseph Lister, the subject of our next podcast, elaborated on the theory and practice of antiseptic surgery in papers published in The Lancet, apparently without knowledge of Semmelweis's work. Despite this, the groundbreaking and critical work of Dr. Ignaz Semmelweis was eventually recognized to the point where he became known as the Savior of Mothers. A number of clinics, hospitals, and even a university have been named after him, and there's a statue of the good doctor in front of St. Rochus in Budapest. I'll put a picture of that up on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. So what can be learned from Semmelweis besides the importance of washing your hands? I think there's a couple of takeaway points here, and there's fault on both sides. Perhaps if Semmelweis had communicated his findings more clearly, and in a more timely fashion, highlighting the importance of publishing your work, and had been less confrontational, as hand-washing protocols may have been more readily accepted. But in what may be a condemnation of the medical establishment of the time, there is now a specific entity for how they rejected his findings, called the Semmelweis reflex, defined as the reflex-like tendency to reject new evidence or new knowledge because it contradicts established norms, beliefs, or paradigms. This is a powerful lesson to all of us to keep an open mind to new ideas that may challenge our own way of thinking or understanding, not only in medicine, but in any field of science or in any aspect of life for that matter. I'll end with a quote from Dr. Semmelweis himself. Quote, "When I look back upon the past, I can only dispel the sadness which falls upon me by gazing into that happy future when the infection will be banished. The conviction that such a time must inevitably sooner or later arrive will cheer my dying hour." End quote. Well, that wraps up another episode of Legends of Surgery. I hope you enjoyed it. Please rate the podcast on iTunes and leave a comment there. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram or like us on Facebook. I've put up some content related to this episode, and I'll be posting some teasers about the next one, as well as any interesting articles I come across. Please feel free to send an email to legendsofsurgery@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you about your thoughts on the podcast or ideas for future episodes. Please join us next time, and thanks for listening.